and our special music for the Hubble Space Telescope.
Sometimes your own sight is limited, and some distant things seem to be invisible. But when there opens up a window to this world of unseen things, you can see the endless beauty beyond Earth that surrounds all of us in every single second of our life. Some observe it, some explore it, and some even find inspiration from it. In space, we are not alone.
Welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I am Andrew Rennie. On this evening's The Space Show, we have the second of four programs to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the launch of the Hubble Space Telescope. We began the program with Christian Noer's Ode to Hubble, which he composed in 2015. On last week's program, I told the story of the genesis and launch of the Hubble Space Telescope. At the end of the show, we told of how the misshapen primary 2.4-meter diameter mirror meant that the telescope was little better than a ground-based one. This space story we're going to play now comes from June of 1994, and we learn how the Hubble was fixed.
NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, presents The Space Story.
And we have liftoff. Liftoff of the Space Shuttle Endeavour on an ambitious mission to service the Hubble Space Telescope.
It was billed as the toughest satellite servicing mission ever undertaken by NASA astronauts. Last December, Space Shuttle Endeavour and its seven-person crew left Earth for a rendezvous with the Earth-circling Hubble Space Telescope. With the huge 12-ton observatory safely cradled inside the cargo bay of the shuttle, pairs of spacewalking astronauts completed a needed overhaul of the telescope. They were faced with a daunting checklist of must-do maintenance, assigned tasks that demanded many months of rehearsal and called for a honing of skills unprecedented in NASA history. Commander of Orbiter Endeavour's flight to service the Hubble Space Telescope is Richard Covey. He and his fellow crew members had each flown in space before, a key ingredient that helped assure mission success, as Covey explains.
I think the biggest payback from having flown previously is the fact that you're not anxious about the space environment when you get there. You know what to expect. You know what your body's going to do. You know what it's like working at the orbiter. Clearly, in this case, with everybody on the crew being experienced flyers, I could see that not only in the planning and preparation for the mission and the way people thought about how they were going to do things on orbit, but the way they actually did them once we got there.
As the saying goes, practice makes perfect. And for Catherine Thornton, one of the four spacewalkers that serviced the Hubble Space Telescope, that meant hundreds of hours of training for her extravehicular activity, or EVA.
It sounds like a lot of time, but when you think about all the number of tasks that we had to do on orbit and the contingencies that we needed to train for, it was not too much time. It was not a matter of overtraining, it was a matter of just getting enough training in everybody that each of us could do any task on board. So we trained two pairs for five EVAs. We trained the 10 EVAs worth in 400 hours.
Despite the practice, were there any surprises for spacewalker Thornton?
A very wise man once told me that a pessimist is an optimist with experience. And I'm somewhat of a pessimist in that regard, and I was always waiting for the bad thing to happen. And I knew if we got through the first EVA that something was not going to work right on the second EVA. So I think the biggest surprise for me was that we got through all of them and the deploy, and everything worked out perfectly.
Mission Commander Covey points to another reason for the servicing success story.
The most important thing to remember is that the Hubble Space Telescope was designed and built to be serviced. So many of the tasks that our EVA crew members performed were thought about and built into the basic telescope system before it was launched the first time.
Adds Kathy Thornton.
I'm hoping that the lessons that we learned on this flight will go into the development of space station. It's very important if we intend to build it and service it with human beings that it be friendly toward those human beings. And I think it's you either pay now or you pay later. And I just as soon see us pay now and build it so that it is easily serviced and therefore increases our chances of doing it correctly than I would seeing it built and we'll think about that later.
One of the more striking moments during the mission was that of astronaut Thornton releasing one of the telescope's replaceable solar panels. Standing alone at the end of the shuttle's outstretched robot arm, she set the solar panel adrift to soar through space high above Earth until it burns up in our atmosphere.
My first reaction was how magnificent the view was to watch it soaring over the desert in Egypt and over the Red Sea. It was just fabulous. I was alone in the universe. I couldn't see any part of the space shuttle because it was behind me, and it was just me and that solar ray, and it was fabulous. It was mesmerizing.
Last month, the first batch of observations from the rejuvenated Hubble Space Telescope were released. Thanks to the astronauts and thousands of engineers and scientists on the ground, the orbiting observatory is now taking far sharper images than ever before.
Now we're ready to go out and continue to do the extraordinary science that the Hubble Space Telescope has done for the last 3.5 years. And we're going to be able to do even more and find more new discoveries that we couldn't until this servicing mission was completed.
This has been The Space Story, brought to you by this station and NASA. For the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, I'm Bob Tebow.
This repair job inspired poet Megan Snyder-Kemp to write a poem. It's read for us by Sandra Spencer of the GRAT program TechLoad.
Repairing the Hubble Telescope by Megan Snyder-Kemp. The camera is having trouble focusing. A blurry spot where the universe is. Outside, a storm is brewing, trash cans into windshields, outside agitators, a nebula of thick dust. The images are black and white, but you can imagine the green of this star's birth as its extra spirals out. This spring, a cosmic mirage where you could watch on every television the death of a star in a supernova explosion 9 billion years ago across the cosmos. Here in Sandtown, 6 men have broken the spine of another. It was a mistake to send the camera out so quickly. Easy to fix the lens, but nearly impossible to reach it, as far out from us as it had drifted already.
Thank you, Sandra. Wonderful reading there. Now, by the end of June of 1994, NASA was able to announce the excitement as Hubble began to make new discoveries.
NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, presents The Space Story. During April 1990, astronauts aboard Space Shuttle Discovery placed the powerful Hubble Space Telescope into orbit. From a vantage point high above Earth, the Spaceborne Observatory began its astronomical assignment to probe the immense universe like no other telescope had ever done before. First images relayed from the orbiting space telescope, however, revealed to scientists that the instrument had a severe problem.
It was a Sunday. It was actually Father's Day, too, on top of everything else. Well, I was crushed. I mean, I think we were all crushed. It was a very deep depression.
That's Ed Wyler, NASA Hubble Space Telescope program scientist. Wyler, along with his space telescope colleagues, later found that Hubble's primary mirror had an optical defect, blurring the telescope's focus and preventing it from immediately achieving key science objectives. But thanks to shuttle astronauts, the Hubble Space Telescope is now returning picture-perfect images. NASA's Wyler recalls when he saw that first fully focused picture.
I'd have to rank that just below, you know, getting married and watching my 2 kids being born. I mean, next to those 3 things, that had to be an event of a lifetime. I mean, seeing that first image coming down. When that first image came down, we just knew that it was fixed because it was a nice, tight little dot as opposed to a big, blurry circle, which we used to get.
With the Hubble Space Telescope now able to scan the universe with a clarity and detail never seen before, Wyler says that the observatory is ready to take on several challenges.
the search for black holes. Do black holes really exist, or are they just a figment of the theoreticians' minds? Now that we have Hubble 6, we'll be able to really prove that they exist or prove that they don't exist, probably over the next course of even maybe 12 months.
Another task is to peer into the universe for a better understanding of the so-called Big Bang. The moment the universe came into being.
How did matter evolve after the Big Bang? That is, how did we get from a uniform cloud of hydrogen expanding from the Big Bang to the galaxy, stars, and planets and complex universe we see today? To do that, we have to look back in distance and time, and we will do that now with the improved Hubble.
Hubble observations will focus on other quests, such as, will the universe expand forever, or slow down, stop, and then collapse upon itself in a mammoth cosmic crunch?
You don't really answer all the questions. What you do is you start to be able to ask more questions. And sometimes that's even more important. I think nature is a lot more bizarre than even our human imagination can conjure up. It holds a lot of surprises for us.
With the early problems encountered by the Hubble Space Telescope now resolved, it is truly astounding scientists from around the globe. NASA's Wyler recalls the reaction from astronomers at a gathering a few months ago.
There was one session where we showed those first images, and I believe something like 1,800 or 1,900 astronomers, which is about the number that were at the meeting, showed up in this one room, made it overflowing, and it was just a really fun session. I mean, we had a few outbreaks of applause, spontaneous applause. It's really incredible for a bunch of conservatives like astronomers, you know.
In 1997, another set of shuttle astronauts will revisit the Space Telescope, fine-tune the Earth-circling observatory, and install new equipment, further enhancing its ability to explore the surrounding cosmos.
And that's the whole theory of Hubble. We keep it up to date, even though it was built in the 1980s, basically, by going up every 3 years or so and not only doing routine maintenance, but upgrading the instrumentation to take advantage of technological advances.
NASA's Hubble Space Telescope is expected to have a long lifetime, opening new horizons in astronomical research. But why a space telescope? Why explore? Why ponder the universe? Ed Wyler explains.
I'd say only people who have had children can understand what I'm going to say, but if you don't believe that humans are born curious, are born explorers, are born asking questions, watch a two-year-old when they first start to crawl or first start to walk. Humans by nature are explorers.
This has been The Space Story, brought to you by this station and NASA. For the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, I'm Bob Thibault.
And since Bob found that report way back in 1994, several things have been found out by the Hubble Space Telescope. First up, black holes have been confirmed to exist. Yes, they're real. And not only will the universe expand forever, it is actually accelerating. The unknown cause is called dark energy. Now, in all, 5 servicing missions were done.
From Sandringham to South Yarra, you're listening to Southern FM.
In early October of 1994, Bob Thibault was able to ask astronomer Ed Wyler about more Hubble discoveries.
NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, presents The Space Story.
You can completely close the doors now. Greg, thank you. Yes, we do, KT. I'm going to breathe a sigh of relief.
Last December, shuttle astronauts carried out one of the most elaborate missions in the history of space flight, the servicing of the Earth-orbiting Hubble Space Telescope. Working on the space observatory, astronauts changed out equipment, replaced solar arrays, and corrected Hubble's distorted vision of the universe due to a fault in the telescope's main mirror. Now, months later, has Hubble been returned to full service status?
The answer is obviously yes, and not only did we fix it, but we fixed it beyond our wildest expectations, so everybody's in a pretty good mood these days.
That's NASA's Ed Wyler, Hubble Space Telescope Program Scientist. Wyler and his colleagues are being inundated by revelations from Hubble. Among the latest, actual confirmation of a massive black hole. Wyler explains.
It's really a demonstration of how science works, and that is for years and years and years, almost 7 decades since Einstein talked about the concept of a black hole, people have theorized about their existence. We saw suggestive evidence all over the place. In fact, before Hubble was fixed, it still had enough imaging power to show us that most galaxies seem to have these very, very bright, compact spots in the center of them. Almost suggested that black holes might be ubiquitous in the universe. They might exist in every galaxy, including our own.
Last May, Hubble astronomers announced they had found telltale evidence for an enormous black hole in a galaxy called M87. Something in that galaxy is so massive yet compact that nothing can escape its gravitation pull, not even light.
So you've got 1 to 2 billion suns, so to speak, concentrated into an area only a light year, which is like a quarter of the distance to the nearest star. That can't be anything else but a black hole. That was the proof. If it's not a black hole, then we totally don't understand physics, and Einstein was totally wrong, and we don't think either of those is true.
Measurements of the object at the galaxy's hub found it weighing as much as billions of suns, but concentrated into a space no larger than our solar system. There must be something there prompting the powerful gravitational attraction.
Fiction or theory has turned to reality. A lot of us grew up in the Star Trek generation, movies about black holes and so on, which were science fiction. Well, now we live in a day where we've turned science fiction into reality, and in some cases, reality is even more fun.
Confirming their existence using the Hubble Space Telescope, black holes can now move from mathematical curiosities to real astronomical objects. Again, Ed Weiler.
When you do the analysis on these disks, they're about the size of our solar system. They're a little elliptical, flattened disk, sort of like a compact disk, if you think of it that way. And each one has a little star in the center of it. Of the 112 newly born stars that we studied in the Orion Nebula, something like 58 of them had these little disks. More than half of them had these little disks. We believe these little disks are exactly what the solar system looked like 5 billion years ago before the planets formed.
Another exciting find by Hubble astronomers was announced in June. The space telescope yielded a close-up look at what appears to be planets in the making around faraway stars. Great disks of dust, the very material for planet formation, can be seen around dozens upon dozens of stars in the Orion Nebula.
So if half of the stars in our own galaxy have planets, and even if the odds were only, say, 1 in a million, that would still leave thousands and thousands of planets like our Earth in our own galaxy. And our galaxy is one of hundreds of billions of galaxies. So to me, the thought that life only evolved on Earth is totally alien. I just can't conceive of how that could be. I mean, why would we be so special in a universe that's almost infinite?
Weiler says that the Hubble data could well imply that half of all stars may be circled by planets. If so, what are the odds of finding Earth-like worlds?
There are more things to discover out there. We're not running out of discovery space, despite what some people might think. The universe is truly infinite, and infinity encompasses a lot.
Indeed, Hubble is opening wide our eyes to the universe around us. More surprises surely await. This has been The Space Story, brought to you by this station and NASA. For the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, I'm Bob Tebow.
And Weiler certainly was correct about exoplanets. Since that report in 1994, we have had thousands of exoplanets have now been discovered. Well, we're celebrating the 30th birthday of the Hubble Space Telescope, that is, since its launch. It was actually built several years before that. To celebrate the 25th anniversary in 2015, Karen Lindsley sang this song called Window on Time.
Starlight began its journey long ago, and my journey still feels so young. Secrets that I'm looking for. touch your mind. There are mysteries beyond human eyes, so come see them through mine. I am your wonder one time. Wonder if ancient eyes look back at me, long dead yet connecting some. Did someone else look out at the universe, searching like we do now? I love to watch the glow of nebulas, where elements have been blood free. Stars plant the seeds of life as they die, making you, making me. And I am a scientist, I am a poet, I'm a teacher who's seen history's light. Let me show it to you, to you. I'll touch your heart, I'll touch your mind. There are mysteries beyond human eyes, so come see them.
Now, here some astronomers discuss the potential of the Hubble Space Telescope to continue to make discoveries.
Hubble has given us 26 years of remarkable observations. But what comes next? Over the last 2 years, we have asked some of its most loyal users, advocates and staff what they think we can expect from the telescope's future. Now it's the time to share their answers and their hopes for the future of Hubble.
30 years from now, Hubble will be remembered as the telescope that transformed our view of the universe. So I think that legacy is secure. Which is much more interesting is what will it do next, and how will it lay the groundwork for the James Webb Space Telescope?
Hubble's legacy is undeniable, and the research it has spawned has already made a huge impact on our knowledge of the universe.
I mean, it's told us how old the universe is, it's told us what the early galaxies look like, and it's produced a whole range of wonderful images, and it's engaged the whole population in astronomy in a way that we haven't seen in any other telescope in human history. And it's been the most productive telescope in human history.
But instead of looking at the achievements in Hubble's past, it's time to look forward. What might be in store for the telescope in the future? A major field Hubble has left to explore is the study of exoplanets, planets orbiting other stars, planets which, when Hubble was launched, we had never seen. Now there are many telescopes dedicated to finding these alien worlds, and nearly 2,000 have been discovered. Once they're identified, Hubble plays a critical role in finding out what these planets are like. How hot are they? What are they made of? How much water do they possess? And much more.
Because the discovery rate for exoplanets is so fast, and this is such a fast-moving field, the planets we have to study now are much better than even a couple of years ago, and this is going to continue throughout the end of Hubble's lifetime. So every successive year, there's new and better planets to look at that we didn't have, you know, even just last year, even just last month. You know, yeah, the actual discovery rate is that exciting. The spectral capabilities of Hubble now are so much better than they were a few years ago that the science questions we're asking are spectacular. How much water is on a planet? You can potentially map out a planet and actually look at one side of the planet compared to the other. So there's science questions that we're going to be addressing, which I think will blow people away.
The exoplanets Hubble has studied, though hardly close neighbors, are within our own galaxy. Other discoveries are likely to lie much, much further afield. The Hubble Deep Fields are among the most influential images the telescope has ever taken. But Hubble can look even deeper into the cosmos by using the universe's natural gravitational lenses to magnify distant objects, something that's being done through the Frontier Fields program.
We'll be studying the places in the sky where the most massive objects in the universe are. These are the strong lensing clusters. And Einstein's theory of general relativity tells us that these massive objects actually bend space and time around them. And so galaxies that are behind these clusters will appear brighter and larger than they would otherwise. So basically these things act as nature's telescopes. So we'll be using Hubble with these natural telescopes to peer deeper into the universe than we've ever been able to before.
Well, first, I think the deeper the better. If we can have programs follow up all these Hubble Deep Field programs further, and even over a patch of sky, just look deeper and deeper and deeper, almost all the way back to the beginning, I think it's wonderful. Because the amazing thing with those Hubble Deep Fields is that when we first looked at them, their reaction was, after so many years about just talking about how did galaxies form, we see how did galaxies form. We actually see it. We see a time sequence in time. We see how it evolved with time because we live in a time machine. I think if we can extend it a bit more, that's wonderful. And then also to look at different environments, the way galaxies look in dense environments, what we call clusters of galaxies, compared with the field. I think in those two areas, Hubble can still do a fine job.
From Cheltenham to Chadstone, you're listening to Southern FM.